KALW.
Hi, this is Janae Darden, and I work in the KALW News Department. I just wanted to let you know we're in our spring membership drive. We're a listener-supported radio station, and you can help us out. Just go to KALW.org and click Donate.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Francisco in the Glen Park area.
Sunset. Portola Valley.
I currently reside in Nob Hill.
West Portal.
I live in Russian Hill.
Coming up, we'll hear an update about how Oakland's cannabis equity program is playing out.
The people who have got cases for selling a product that people are making money off of deserve to have a chance to make money off of it too. Period.
A reality check on the cannabis industry. Then, a celebrated deaf-blind lawyer from Oakland fights popular assumptions about disability.
I see myself as strong and powerful, even though the most of society might frame me as helpless and incompetent. So I'm resisting those stories and creating my own story.
Stay tuned. A special interactive edition of Cross Currents is coming up. Oakland passed an ordinance to help people busted for marijuana crimes enter the legal market 3 years ago. The policy created an equity program for cannabis, and it grabbed headlines across the country. It's even served as a model for other cities that want to level the playing field for black and brown people who've borne the brunt of the war on drugs. But so far, just one person benefiting from Oakland's equity program owns a dispensary that's open for business. KALW's Holly Jim McDeed went to find out why.
It's a big day for cannabis entrepreneur Alfonso T. Blunt. Yes, that's really his name. He's hosting a grand opening party for his dispensary in East Oakland, Blunts and More.
We got all the edibles, all the creams, we got everything. Like, I call it the Walmart of weed.
Compared to Walmart, Blunts and More is peppier and more cannabis-oriented. The room is bustling with people eating barbecue, chatting it up, and browsing for cannabis products through classy glass counters.
We are at Blunts and More, the happy store. Let us help you find your happy at the happy store.
This is a pretty sweet PR op for the city, too. A couple of Oakland officials pose for photos. They're eating up the chance to show their famous equity program is working. But so far, Blunts and More is the first and only dispensary to open with the help of that policy. The program gives permitting priority for people like Blunt, who was arrested for marijuana charges in the past.
We're the first ex-felon with a club. That's black. That doesn't happen.
This dispensary has been a pipe dream for Blunt for decades now. He says he started selling weed in East Oakland when he was 16 years old, and he still remembers the first time his grandma took him to a medical marijuana dispensary back in the 90s. Blunt was mesmerized.
And I'm like, I thought you were going to a doctor. She's like, no, you can get weed out of there. I'm like, I need one of those.
Once Blunt realized there were people out there selling cannabis legally, he wanted in. Back then, like today, almost all medical marijuana dispensaries were owned by white people. In 2003, Blunt tried to buy a club of his own.
But we were told flat out by a good white friend of mine that they're not going to give it to no black dudes.
So Blunt says he carried on in the shadows. At first, he sold dime bags and weed pastries from the back of his car. When his first son was about to be born, he needed some extra cash. And so he started selling on street corners. In 2004, the cops showed up. He was arrested and got 5 years probation.
I was always raised that a black man's always going to have a job and a hustle, you know what I mean? And also raised to not let nothing stop you. Like, it was fine. I lived life normal for them 5 years. I worked, still smoked weed, still sold weed.
Black and white people use marijuana at roughly the same rates. But in Oakland in 2015, black people made up 77% of marijuana arrests. Blunt says that's why Oakland's equity program is necessary.
The people who have got cases for selling a product that people are making money off of deserve to have a chance to make money off of it too. Period.
The program is intended to help people like Blunt get into the cannabis industry. That includes delivering, growing, and manufacturing products. It also includes owning dispensaries. Under the rules of the program, half of new permits must go to people who were arrested in Oakland for marijuana charges, or to people who lived in a neighborhood with a high number of pot arrests. But from the start, the program has been controversial. Cannabis attorneys and entrepreneurs in Oakland criticized it for not providing enough funding or resources. Some Black entrepreneurs still feel left behind because of the program's requirements. Like Chip Moore, the CEO of 420 Blackbirds. He shows me around the group's warehouse in West Oakland. It's huge. Cannabis-themed artwork hangs from the walls.
Cannabis is part of everything we do here, one way or another. So I'm guessing everybody that did this beautiful work has smoked a little weed when they did it.
Moore is an African-American business owner, and he's hustled in the underground cannabis industry for decades.
African-Americans have always been here in this industry. We weren't able to make the distribution trips to Humboldt because, you know, if you look like me, you're going to get pulled over. So, you know, those are those disparities where I'm like, damn, I'm getting affected by the war on drugs twice. First time, just by being a Black man in America. Second time, for not being the right kind of Black man in Oakland.
420 Blackbirds is based in Oakland, but Moore didn't qualify for the city's equity program because he lives in Berkeley. Moore applied for a dispensary permit, but he didn't get it. Oakland has only given out a few licenses so far. So his dream of operating a dispensary is still on hold. That's true for a lot of people hoping to enter this industry. It takes time, real estate, and money to start a company. And cannabis taxes are especially high in Oakland, up to 45%.
Because this is the very beginning of an industry. So what you're asking these people to do with limited budgets, limited connections, limited network, is daunting. If you can find one time in America where somebody was given equity, I'll eat my hat.
Back at his opening day party, Alfonso T. Blunt is proud to be the first equity applicant with a dispensary in Oakland. And the only reason he owns a dispensary at all is because he entered a lottery, a literal lottery. Last year, 32 equity applicants all entered into a drawing, almost like the Hunger Games. It was televised and everything.
We had to pick a bingo ball, toss it in a little tray, let it roll around, and if you were the last four balls picked, you won a license. Our balls on the last four balls.
But when you hear Blunt's story, it's clear he's not succeeding just because of a lottery or because of the equity program. He's been a businessman for decades, and he knows how to make connections. His co-founder worked at Morgan Stanley, and her mom worked as a paralegal at a cannabis law firm. But now that Blunt finally has a space of his own, he has the chance to give others a shot.
If we want to help bring young people of color into this industry for other things than just being a bud tender or security. We want people that know how to build the grow labs, build the warehouses. So that type of stuff we can bring to Oakland and then branch it out wherever, because I want a blunt some more in every city that's legal.
By the end of this year, Oakland officials expect to have another lottery for equity applicants. During that drawing, another four more people will win permits. And then, for them, the challenge of opening a successful cannabis dispensary will begin. In Oakland, I'm Holly J. McDeed for Cross Currents.
My last one. What? You ain't got no more weed? Man, let's hit the happy stove. What's that? Blunts
and more smoke. Holly is KALW's justice reporter. Got a tip for her or a story idea you'd like to share? Send her an email at justice@kalw.org.
If you need some smoke, go to the happy store. How long can you hit it and hold your breath? How long can you hit it and hold your breath? How long can you hit it and hold your breath? How long can you hit it and hold your breath?
I keep it lit, plus I make you smile. Welcome to the happy store, it's going down. I need smoke and I'm all out, so I need more. I gotta go to the happy store when I need dope. Holla at my people.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hana Baba. Haben Girma is a 31-year-old lawyer from Oakland. In 2013, she was named a champion of change by President Barack Obama. In 2016, she was listed in Forbes magazine's 30 Under 30, and it's all because of her work in the disability community. Haben was born deaf-blind to an Eritrean mom and Ethiopian dad. Her passion for helping the disabled community led her to become a lawyer and the first ever deaf-blind person to graduate from Harvard Law School. She's won cases against major companies, and today she consults with organizations and companies to make sure they make products that are accessible and provide services that are inclusive. Now, she's writing a book about her life. Haben Girma came by our studios and sat down with KALW's Hana Baba. She brought her guide dog Milo and an interpreter who you may hear typing in the background of this interview.
So most people have an idea of people with disabilities. We're actually very diverse. We have lots of different interests, lots of different abilities. But most people in the public have a preconceived idea of who we are and what we're capable of. And they treat us based on that. There's like a single disability story of incompetence and helplessness and just all around very boring. That's the dominant assumption. So when I interact with people, I have to express a lot of patience, a lot of forgiveness, and also optimism. I'm hopeful that with a little training, they'll be able to move from the assumptions and stereotypes to treating me as an actual human being with interests and skills and talents and abilities.
That takes me to your work, this kind of, you know, we hear about cultural competency training, but your work is so important where you go into organizations and you go into companies and say, wait, how accessible is your product? You're making people think about something that maybe, you know, they never thought about before. So tell me a little bit about your work and what you do.
Through my work, I teach people that disability is an opportunity for innovation. When you make your products and services accessible, more people gain access to your product, which means a larger audience for you and more revenue in the long run. For example, podcasts, radio, and transcripts. If you add transcripts to your show, more people gain access to your show, deaf individuals and hearing individuals. Hearing individuals gain more access because transcripts benefit anyone who wants to go back and look up details. If they are a journalist and they want to write an article about the show, it helps to be able to review the transcripts. Also, search engine optimization. With more text associated with your show, more people will find your show through keyword searches.
And you had another piece of advice for us as journalists, which is, please, journalists, you said, don't use the word inspirational to describe somebody with a disability. What's wrong with the word inspirational?
It's cliched, it's boring, it's overused. In fact, when the average person wants to describe someone with a disability, their default word is inspirational. We start using it now without even thinking about it, so it's lost its meaning. As journalists, you have a responsibility to create exciting, engaging content that teaches people new things, that brings us diverse stories that we rarely hear about. So instead of using the word inspirational, pause and think. What's another word you can use? Even role model would be better and more exciting than using the word inspirational.
Mm-hmm. So for our listeners, you are deafblind. So can you tell us how we're doing this interview now? Can you tell that story to the folks that can't see us right now, but they can hear us on the radio?
I'm deafblind. I have limited vision and hearing. And all my life, I've been finding ways to connect with people because I'm social like most human beings and want to have relationships and connections with people. The system I'm using right now is a braille display. So a computer with braille dots on it, and I run my fingers over the braille dots. And this is wirelessly connected to a QWERTY keyboard, and we have a typist who's transcribing Hanna's words, and I'm reading it on a digital braille display.
Tell me about your family's journey to the U.S. And, you know, some articles say she's Eritrean. Some articles say she's Ethiopian. And there's some Sudan in your story, too, where I'm from. So tell me that story.
My mother grew up in Eritrea. My father grew up in Ethiopia. They met here in the U.S., and I was born and raised in Oakland, California. Ethiopia and Eritrea were in war for 30 years. Eritrea wanted independence. And I grew up hearing the stories of the struggles of Eritreans seeking freedom and independence. And while that story is not exactly about disability, hearing those stories reminded me, even if society frames you as weak, you can always find solutions. You do not need to see yourself as weak. And I don't see myself as weak. I see myself as strong and powerful, even though the most of society might frame me as helpless and incompetent. So I'm resisting those stories and creating my own story.
So how were those stories communicated to you? How did your family communicate with you when you were little?
Deafblindness is a spectrum. I was born deafblind. I had more vision and hearing when I was younger, and my vision and hearing has deteriorated through my life and will probably continue to deteriorate throughout my life. Mm-hmm. I could hear my parents better when I was younger. It was not perfect. So they communicated to me by voice. And in quiet settings, and they were close by, I could hear them.
And then you go into Harvard Law. I mean, what brought about your wanting to go into law school? Why law?
Law gives you a lot of power, and it opens up a lot of employment opportunities. I was really scared that I'd never get a job and no one would hire me. I tried looking for a job when I was in college, and so many employers turned me down. They assumed I was incompetent. A lot of employers, if they just looked at my resume, great grades, valedictorian in high school, awards, they'd get excited, they'd invite me for an interview. But once they discovered my disabilities, then they would come up with all kinds of excuses not to hire me. Mm-hmm. It was incredibly frustrating. Mm-hmm. So I stepped back and asked myself, what are my talents? What is a field that would value my talents? And law, civil rights law particularly, is a field that values the talents of people with disabilities. There's still discrimination in the legal field, and lawyers with disabilities are still fighting for greater access. But I've had more positive experiences trying to find employment in the civil rights field compared to the general field.
And so, Haben, what do you see right now is the biggest issue that people with disabilities are dealing with?
The big thing right now is a lot of the digital content being developed. New apps, new websites, new digital services are not being designed with access in mind. These are among some of the easiest things to make accessible. So we want to get more of these companies, like startups, to make their services accessible, designed for it to be accessible from the start.
Is there a recent case you can talk about that you were successful with in terms of accessibility and disability rights?
One of my favorite cases is a case called National Federation of the Blind versus Script. And Script is a digital library. Blind readers wanted to read books on that library. And at first, Script said they didn't have to make their library accessible. We disagreed. We took them to court. And the judge held that, yes, Script has to make their services accessible. Online services are covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act.
President Obama named you a White House Champion of Change. You received the Helen Keller Achievement Award. You were in the Forbes 30 Under 30. This is like a whirlwind. Is it a lot at times? So you just want to like ride a horse? Because I know you like to do horse riding too.
You did hear about horses and Haven? And it's been a while since the two have been together. It's been maybe a year since the last time I went horseback riding. I do miss it. It was incredibly fun. I travel with a guide dog, and riding a horse kind of reminds me of traveling with a guide dog. You tell the horse left, right, forward, canter, and if it's a well-trained horse, it responds.
If.
I love the feeling of just riding and feeling the wind on your face and the movement of the horse. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'll let you keep that one. I'm not going to ride on a horse hopping. I can't do the horse. I like to dance.
There's similarities with dancing and being on a horse? Because there's also a lot of movement.
Nope.
Are you uncomfortable with motorcycle rides?
Yes, I am. Can we stop talking about horses?
You kept bringing it up. So take responsibility for this, Hannah.
Haben, thank you.
You're very welcome. And by the way, I noticed that you're ending the conversation about horses by ending the interview. Very clever.
Yes.
Great strategy.
I'm smart like that. I didn't go to Harvard, but I'm smart.
All right, everyone. This proves that no one needs to go to Harvard.
Thank you very much.
That's disability lawyer Haben Girma talking with KALW's Hannah Baba. Haben's book comes out in August. It's called Haben, the Deaf-Blind Woman Who Conquered Harvard Law. You can pre-order your copy. We'll show you how at kalw.org. Listening to Mint Julep from Berkeley. They're performing in their hometown tomorrow night at Cornerstone.
You're a butterfly's yellow wing that came into my heart and made it swing back and forth on an oak tree. You're as quick as a comet, smooth like the sea. Like a comma's lips, you make me slip, and I'll make you mine with a single kiss. With your sunrise
while we're listening to that, let me just say we love connecting with our community. Local music's part of that, and we bring it to you every day that Cross Currents airs. It's part of the package we bring you of news and culture all about the Bay Area. We've been doing it for over a decade now, with your support. We can't do this without you. So please help us out today during the first day of our spring membership drive. Call 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. Or go online at kalw.org. August moon and the way your heart beats makes the flowers bloom like it's spring in October.